And we are back with another episode of the Kyle Anzalone Show. And the news cycle today has been absolutely crazy. I feel like I've just been working 24/7 over the past couple of weeks, trying to keep up with everything going on in the world. Donald Trump is making major headlines. There's a lot we have to talk about today. And it really seems like with Donald Trump, it's almost everything's like making a wish with a genie, right? Where, you know, you wish for $1 million and the genie drops it on your head and kills you or something like that, where you want to get rid of the NATO alliance. And Donald Trump is going to maybe do that, but only through going to war with Europe over Greenland, which is even worse. Or, you know, you want him to close the borders and have a realistic immigration policy. And now we have a militaristic police force all over our country, rounding up random people. And in fact, as we'll talk about in today's show, even using AI to help out in the process. So a lot to talk about on today's show. Trump says we will have Greenland. The president is wrong about NATO. Trump claims he is about to end the war in Ukraine, and an Israeli-style AI targeting program for ICE. I mean, this is absolutely unbelievable, and we have to talk about it on today's show. But let's kick it off here with Greenland. Donald Trump is at the World Economic Forum in Davos, and earlier today he was speaking. He talked about a range of topics, as Trump always does. He rambles. He actually looked a little bit under the weather as he was giving this address, but he was definitely off script a lot, had a lot of interesting things to say. So let's roll this first clip.
He never asked for anything. And we never got anything. We probably won't get anything unless I decide to use excessive strength and force, where we would be, frankly, unstoppable. But I won't do that. Okay? Now everyone's saying, oh, good. That's probably the biggest statement I made, because people thought I would use force. I don't have to use force. I don't want to use force. I won't use force. All the United States is asking for is a place called Greenland, where we already had it as a trustee, but respectfully returned it back to Denmark not long ago after we defeated the Germans, the Japanese, the Italians, and others in World War II. We gave it back to them.
So a lot to say here, but first of all, the big part about this part of Trump's address is that he says the U.S. isn't going to use military force to take Greenland. Now, this shouldn't be a significant announcement from a U.S. president. After all, we, you know, shouldn't be going around and expanding our borders. We got enough problems here at home to address that we don't need to go and acquire Greenland as a part of U.S. policy. But that Donald Trump in recent days had been asked if he would use military force to acquire Greenland. And he had said that he's not willing to talk about that. The White House has said something along the lines of all options are on the table. So there was a real concern here that Donald Trump was actually considering using military force to take Greenland. Now, almost more shocking than that, that he, you know, doesn't, when he's in the United States talking to the American people, addressing American reporters, he's not telling them that he's not going to use military force to take Greenland. He waits until he's at Davos in front of a bunch of European leaders. And I think in part he does this because he wants to issue commentary on his own statement. He wants to not only say that the U.S. isn't going to take Greenland, he then wants to tell the audience, the European leaders, how they should be acting. They should be breathing a sigh of relief. They should be happy about this. But then he goes on to say, we are going to acquire Greenland. And so this still puts us in the problem of how is the president planning on doing this? And so he has some more statements when it comes to Greenland. Let's roll the next clip.
American presidents have sought to purchase Greenland for nearly two centuries. You know, for two centuries they've been trying to do it. They should have kept it after World War II, but they had a different president. That's all right. People think differently. Much more necessary now than it was at that time, however. In 2019, Denmark said that they would spend over $200 million to strengthen Greenland's defenses. But as you know, they spent less than 1% of that amount. 1%, there's no sign of Denmark there. And I say that with great respect for Denmark, whose people I love, whose leaders are very good. It's the United States alone that can protect this giant mass of land, this giant piece of ice, develop it and improve it and make it so that it's good for Europe and safe for Europe and good for us. And that's the reason I'm seeking immediate negotiations to once again discuss the acquisition of Greenland by the United States, just as we have acquired many other territories throughout our history, as many of the European nations have. They've acquired. There's nothing wrong with it.
So there's a lot here. The big part, of course, is Trump saying that we're entering into immediate negotiations to acquire Greenland. The problem is Greenland isn't for sale, right? I can't just go knock on my neighbor's door and say, we're entering into immediate negotiations for me to buy your house if his house isn't on the market and he doesn't want to move, right? And if I do that every day, I think he's going to get kind of concerned that maybe I really want his house and I might do something absolutely insane to take it. And so Donald Trump ruling out using military force, but then saying we are going to acquire this territory is kind of confounding, because if it's not going to, if Denmark is not willing to negotiate and not willing to sell the United States or in some other way grant the United States Denmark through a diplomatic process, then the only other option is military. And let's go ahead and just play this clip of the Danish Prime Minister explaining this isn't an option.
As I also understand, the President touches on this in the speech in a way that respects our red lines. That's what we can negotiate about. I mean, we don't start any negotiations based on giving up on some fundamental principles. We will never do that. We are living in 2026. We stand on a foundation, one that the U.S. itself has largely helped to create after World War II, where there are international legal rules, where the right of peoples to self-determination must be respected, and the sovereignty of nations, and that's the approach we take into these discussions, and we are not going to budge an inch on that.
He's saying we're not going to budge an inch on the core thing, which is, you know, sovereignty and respect for international law, which means Greenland isn't giving, or Denmark isn't giving Greenland to the United States of America. And so we come back to the fundamental problem here, which is what does Trump do when he says we need Greenland, we must have Greenland, we have to acquire Greenland? He's making this about our national security. He's saying this over and over and over again, and Greenland isn't, or Denmark isn't willing to give up Greenland. So then what happens? How does the U.S. acquire Greenland? This seems a real problem for Trump. And my guess is that he is still eyeing using military force. I think he actually ran into a little bit of a problem that he created for himself, which is he not only said this, but then he started to poke at and start to escalate an economic war with the Europeans. He started by placing tariffs on 8 countries, 10% tariffs, threatening to raise those tariffs to 25% in June. And Europe responded in a couple of ways. One, the European Parliament actually voted today, after Trump made these remarks, they voted to cancel a trade agreement that they have with the United States that was signed back in June. In that trade agreement, the U.S. agreed to lower tariffs on the European countries in exchange for the European countries agreeing to invest $600 billion in the American economy and also buy $750 billion in American energy exports. And so this was, you know, a massive influx for the American economy. And not only that, Europe does a lot of other business in the United States. They buy a lot of U.S. Treasury bonds. And so not only did Europe cancel that agreement, but European countries were also talking about selling off their U.S. Treasury bonds. Just, you know, non-government pension funds had announced that they were selling off their U.S. treasuries. And so this was going to create a problem for the U.S. dollar. And I think Trump realized he got himself into a real pickle here, where he was going to end up doing damage to the American economy in the process of taking Greenland, which I'm sure would have been highly, highly unpopular with the American people. So all this, you know, said, Trump has just create a whole unnecessary problem with all this. The U.S. doesn't need to take Greenland, doesn't need to have Greenland. The whole thing that he keeps going back to in all of his speeches that, oh, Russia and China are presenting a threat to Greenland, and the government of Denmark isn't doing enough to protect the island from those two countries, which, you know, he says, oh, they agreed to invest $200 million in their defense of Greenland. Well, it's a huge territory. $200 million isn't going to do absolutely anything. But the most important point is Denmark is a member of NATO. Greenland, being a Danish colony, is under NATO protection. And Donald Trump says again and again and again that the U.S. will uphold its commitments to NATO, which means if Russia or China attacked Greenland, the U.S. would come to the island's defense. And so what he's saying, that Russia or China are going to attack Greenland if the U.S. doesn't take it over, is simply untrue, because it still has the backing of the American military and the status quo. Now, one interesting thing that Donald Trump keeps doing that isn't getting a whole lot of attention is he keeps trying to cast doubt on Denmark's claim to Greenland. He'll say something like, oh, they had a couple of boats land there a couple of hundred years ago, and why does that mean that they control it today? We had a couple boats land there too, which I'm sure there have been American vessels in Greenland, although I'm pretty sure Denmark had established a presence in Greenland before America was an independent country. So, you know, the timing on that is somewhat significant as to how colonies and things like that are determined. Now, as a libertarian, of course, I think the Greenlanders should, if they want to remain a part of the Kingdom of Denmark, let them do that. But if they prefer a path of independence, I think they probably do, according to some of the polls I've seen, that they should be allowed to do that. But of course, it has nothing to do with the United States of America. He's also referred to the fact that during World War II, there was large American occupation there, and, you know, we scaled back that occupation after the end of that conflict. And he's basically saying that that was a mistake, that we should have basically just kept Greenland militarized colony of the United States, and then it could be an official colony or part of the United States under the Trump presidency. So this all about Greenland seems completely asinine, but it is very important for a lot of reasons, including this does really have the potential to fracture the North Atlantic Alliance. And I'm not even saying this as necessarily a bad thing, right? I wish the United States would get out of NATO and would support almost any scenario that gets us out of NATO. Maybe the one scenario I wouldn't support is the United States going to war with Europe over a completely irrelevant territory to the United States of America, and then having the alliance fracture, the relationship fracture, the trade agreements fracture, all over something that absolutely does not benefit Americans at all. We should withdraw from NATO. We shouldn't go to war with NATO, which seems to be the path that Trump really wants to go down. Now, after Trump gave his actual address at the WEF in Davos, he then sat down with NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte on the sidelines and gave a press conference. So I have a clip from that.
Mr. President, the Danish foreign minister rejected your call to negotiate on Greenland.
I didn't call him.
The Danish foreign minister rejected what you said in your speech, that you were hoping to negotiate to acquire Greenland, essentially saying that this is not something that they are willing to discuss. So what will those negotiations
look like? Well, they didn't tell me that. So when they tell me, because I don't like getting it secondhand, if he wants to tell me, he'll tell me that to my face.
So you see Trump watching his plan absolutely blow up in his face in real time, right? This reporter is saying that, you know, she's, I think, referencing the clip of the Danish prime minister that I played before, that they had ruled out negotiating over their what they view as their sovereign territory. And now what is Donald Trump going to do? Well, apparently he's going to sit down with NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte, who is not Danish, And he says that he has reached a framework with Rutte. Can we pull up this Truth Social post that Donald Trump put out just this afternoon? Donald Trump writes, based upon a very productive meeting that I had with the Secretary General of NATO, Mark Rutte, we have formed the framework of a future deal with respect to Greenland and, in fact, the entire Arctic region. And so now Donald Trump says, oh, I sat down with Rutte, who I believe was the former prime minister of the Netherlands, so again, not Denmark, and we reached an agreement on Greenland. What does that have to do with anything? Right, going back to the example of my neighbor's house before, right? If my neighbor who lives to the left, if I want his house and keep, you know, telling him he has to sell it to me, even though he doesn't want to, I go talk to my neighbor on the right and he agrees that they're going to sell me, you know, the neighbor on the left's house. That means absolutely nothing. It has nothing to do with the situation here. And yet Donald Trump is announcing this as if he's reached some massive deal for Greenland. Now, I could imagine one or two scenarios here. One, Trump is actually backing down. He's realized that the economic ramifications of severing ties with Europe over Greenland simply isn't worth it. And so what he's going to do is Mark Rutte is going to go to NATO and he's going to get each country to pledge between like 100 and 1,000 soldiers to send to Greenland, some F-35s are going to build some military bases, spend a few billion dollars in Greenland, and then Trump is going to say, because of my threats, the island is now protected from Russia and China, which, again, never presented a threat to Greenland in the first place. So maybe this is Donald Trump finding an exit ramp. The second possibility is Trump really doesn't understand the whole dynamics at play here. And he really thinks that he is going to send J.D. Vance, Marco Rubio, and Steve Witkoff to sit down with some NATO officials, and they're going to work out a deal for the U.S. to acquire Greenland. It's absolutely insane and completely out of the realm of what's going to happen, but that is what the President of the United States is saying. Now, maybe the most interesting statement at the WEF this year was from the Canadian Prime Minister, Mark Carney. This is only kind of tangentially related to the Greenland thing, but I really just want to play this clip because I got a huge kick out of it.
We knew the story of the international rules-based order was partially false, that the strongest would exempt themselves when convenient, that trade rules were enforced asymmetrically. And we knew that international law applied with varying rigor depending on the identity of the accused or the victim. This fiction was useful, and American hegemony in particular helped provide public goods, open sea lanes, a stable financial system, collective security, and support for frameworks for resolving disputes. So we placed the sign in the window. We participated in the rituals. And we largely avoided calling out the gaps between rhetoric and reality. This bargain no longer works. Let me be direct. We are in the midst of a rupture, not a transition. Over the past two decades, a series of crises in finance, health, energy, and geopolitics have laid bare the risks of extreme global integration. But more recently, great powers have begun using economic integration as weapons. Tariffs as leverage, financial infrastructure as coercion, supply chains as vulnerabilities to be exploited. You cannot live within the lie of mutual benefit through integration when integration becomes the source of your subordination.
Absolutely incredible, right? That this is the leader of Canada just coming on stage and saying, all those years that we talked about international law, we knew it was all fake, that the war in Iraq, that wasn't legal, that all these countries we sanctioned, we looked the other way, even though it was a violation of international law. But now that Donald Trump is treating Canada like he treats Iran or Venezuela, well, now it's a problem. Now it has to be addressed. Now we can't play pretend anymore. now it matters. It's really just an absolute.
Carvana's so easy, just a click, and we've got ourselves a car. See?
So many cars. That's a clicktastic inventory.
And check out the financing options. Payments to fit our budget. I mean, that's
Clickonomics 101.
Delivery to our door?
Just a hop, skip, and a click away.
And bought.
No better feeling than when everything just clicks. Buy your car today on Carvana. Delivery fees may apply.
Crazy admission. First of all, that all of us were right all along, that when we have said this isn't about international law, this isn't about human rights, this isn't about making sure that bad regimes don't make money, that's why we had to have these sanctions in place. It was that's all a lie. As he said, it was a ritual. We went through the ritual, which this is the part Lee Zan said. It's a blood ritual, right? This is the ritual to create a war in a country where there need not be war. These are wars of choice. These are sanctioning countries because we have minor disagreements with the leaders of those countries. Not major disagreements. We don't have territorial disputes with the Iranians. The Iranian government isn't dropping bombs in the United States. There's not a mass wave of Iranians arriving at the U.S. southern border, right? We have minor, insignificant differences with the Iranians that would matter 0% to any Americans as they go about their daily lives whatsoever. But because, you know, there's influences in the United States that don't like Iran, and they decided that they're an enemy of choice, the entire Western world goes along with the ritual that, oh, they're bad, we have to condemn them, naughty, 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 and this is all about human rights and for the good of the world and about international law and upholding what's right. And he's saying that was all this whole entire time, it was all just a lie, that they've been, all their moral grandstanding, as he, over the past couple of decades, as he said, has been just that. It has nothing to do about helping the Venezuelans or the Iranian people, the Iraqi people, the Syrians, and two dozen other countries that have been absolutely destroyed by the West, and all in the name of human rights. But it's not about human rights, guys. And so it's great that, you know, we're getting this admission. And one of maybe the positive things about Donald Trump is he's provoking leaders to make these kinds of statements. But it is just so telling and so bleak that we've had to sit through this for so long while they lied to us about, this being about human rights. And those of us who oppose these policies, right? When if you didn't oppose last week, or if you didn't support last week, the United States bombing Iran, then why don't you care about the Iranian people? You care so much about the Palestinian people, but now the Iranian people are the Iranian government's killing their people. Why don't you care about them? And they keep, going and trying to demonize you for opposing their wars, which they say are based around human rights. But as Mark Carney says, it's all just a ritual. It's all just performance. It's all just propaganda to get you to either go or to send your children to go and fight foreign wars, potentially, lose your children, lose your life yourself, spend your country's money to achieve the goals of elites in a few countries. All right. Now, there's one more clip of Trump's press conference with Mark Rutte I wanted to play, and I just want to really debunk this lie. So let's go ahead and roll this clip.
We lifted GDP from 2% to 5% together. That was done jointly, and it worked out really very well, and we appreciate it, Mark. So we'll be talking about various things. We'll be talking about Greenland. I imagine it may come up in our discussion. But I think the trip has been amazing so far. It's been amazing. As you know, we're staying, and tomorrow we're doing something else having to do with the Border Peace. We're getting tremendous acceptance of that. It's going to be great. So we'll see how that all works out, but we're doing that tomorrow.
So Donald Trump keeps doing this. He keeps saying this again and again and again, and it's so misleading that he raised the minimum spending among NATO members on their military to 5% of GDP. This is an absolute outright lie. So what NATO did agree to is they have this loose cap that says all members must spend 2% of GDP on defense. Now, currently, a third of the alliance doesn't meet that minimum, and there are no repercussions for not meeting that minimum. So it's really not a minimum. It's just a recommendation, right? It's not a standard. There's no consequences. It's not, you know, if your country isn't spending this much on defense, then they no longer get to access the mutual defense of the alliance or something like that, right? It's just a recommendation. However, last year, they did increase the cap to basically 3.5%. And then they changed that to 5%, but 1.5% is allowed to be spent on infrastructure. So if the Germans build a new railway or a new highway, that counts towards their minimum spending on defense, even though it has nothing to do with defense. Right. Oh, one day we might put a tank on a railway car and run it down this railway. And so this counts as defense spending. Obviously not. Right. So they actually raised the recommendation to 3.5%, not 2%. But several members said that they have no plans to meet that. Several members don't have a plan to get to 2% by the end of. And by the way, that cap or that recommendation doesn't even take effect until 2032, so 6 years from now. Even if Donald Trump gets another term, he would still be out of office by the time that thing went into effect. And so it's never going to happen. This is something that NATO did to pull the wool over the eyes of Donald Trump, right? They're going to pretend like, oh, we're working on hitting the Trump 5% goal, when in reality, they're just going to now say that they're spending 1.5% more of their GDP on defense every year because they're going to start including their infrastructure spending, which they were already spending on. It just didn't go to count towards the old 2% goal. So this is all just fitching, absolute fitching. And that's why Mark Rutte fist pumps there, because he knows that this is all just a scam to keep the Americans within NATO and get through Trump's 4 years in office until there's a more controllable figure in the White House. Now, he also had something to say on Ukraine here, so I want to play this. Haven't talked about Ukraine a lot recently on the show, and want to give some updates.
Ending 8 wars. I have one to go. I thought that was going to be one of the easiest ones, and it's turning out to be one of the tougher ones. But you heard me say before, 25, 30,000 people are dying a month. It's ridiculous. And I think we're getting close. Jared's here, and Steve Witkoff is here. A lot of people that are working on that are here, and they've done a good job.
All right, you just cut the clip, and then I'll just talk. So I know, sorry that the volume on that clip was really low, but basically what Donald Trump's saying, he thinks we're very close to getting a peace deal done in Ukraine. In reality, the war is raging on in Ukraine. On Tuesday night, 300 Russian drones and missiles knocked out power to tens of thousands of people in Kiev. By the way, it's like -3 degrees in that city right now. They knocked out the external power supply for the Chernobyl nuclear power plant disaster site there in northern Ukraine. This war is not de-escalating. We are not moving closer to peace talks in any sense of the word. Right now, just like it's a complete and utter fiction that Donald Trump could negotiate with Mark Rutte to reach a deal for Greenland, Donald Trump is working on signing a peace agreement with just one party to the war in Ukraine. The Russians have said that they disagree with half of what's in the proposal that the Ukrainians and the Americans are working on, and yet Zelensky is going to come to the United States and sign it in the next couple of weeks. That agreement is going to say that the U.S. is going to try to make Ukraine a formal ally of the United States of America with a full-on bilateral mutual defense pact. The one thing that Russia said when they invaded Ukraine is that Ukraine has to be neutral. So in a very important way, Trump is actually taking us further away from resolving the war in Ukraine than actually getting us closer to finding an end to that conflict. He is completely unhinged and disattached from reality, especially when it comes to American foreign policy. And we just see it again and again and again. And when it comes to Ukraine, he's helping to escalate this conflict, right? The Ukrainians are hitting energy targets deep into Russian territory. They try to hit one of Putin's homes in Russia. They are escalating and provoking this war with the full-on support of the United States of America. Sure, unlike Joe Biden, he's not sending $2 billion in American weapons to Ukraine every week, but he is helping Ukraine in other really essential ways and in ways that the Biden administration wasn't, particularly through the intelligence sharing and helping the Ukrainians to map out routes to send drones to hit energy targets deep inside Russian territory. The more this happens, the more the Russians are going to escalate. Just a week ago, they hit Ukraine with the second Oreshnik missile ever fired. This is a hypersonic. It is a nuclear-capable missile, although at the speeds that it travels, it could do tremendous damage without a warhead whatsoever, which is what hit a military base in Western Ukraine last week. They destroyed a drone facility, a warehouse, a military barracks, and a couple other things with a single missile. And this was a direct response to the Ukrainians attacking Putin's residence. So as the Ukrainians continue to escalate and carry out more provocative tats deeper and deeper inside of Russian territory with American support, the Russians are going to also escalate in kind, and they are going to knock out more Ukrainian energy infrastructure, leaving people cold in the middle of winter, making the Chernobyl site more vulnerable, and also killing a lot of young Ukrainian men who are conscripted and sent to the front lines. You know, I read a story recently that I guess 2 million Ukrainian men at this point are dodging the draft, and another 200,000 have gone AWOL. I mean, massive amounts of manpower problems in Ukraine. And if Donald Trump doesn't get realistic on the Ukraine war very fast, he could be looking at a situation where the Ukrainian military collapses and Zelensky is negotiating at the barrel of Vladimir Putin's gun, and Putin essentially will dictate terms to Zelensky, and there's nothing Washington could do about it anymore. So if he wants to have any influence on the war in Ukraine, he better exert that influence soon and be very tough on Zelensky. Now, before I let you go, this is extremely troubling, absolutely unbelievable. I'm sure a lot of people in my audience will remember something that I've been covering for a couple years now, and that is the Lavender program in Gaza, which was an AI developed by the Israelis where they would essentially give every person in Gaza a score of how likely they were to be a Hamas militant. And so, you know, they would have a certain, they would set the metric, let's say at 70 points, you're considered a member of Hamas. And so then they plug that into the AI, and then the AI spits out a list of names of everybody it says scores above a 70 on the how likely are you to be Hamas. And then some IDF soldier, and this is according to IDF soldiers, spend 20 seconds on each name. So basically, they check to make sure the person's a male and above the age 18, and if they are, they're put on a kill list. Now, as the Israelis said at the time, it's very easy to change these metrics. So let's say if you set it at 70, the Air Force is running out of targets. They're saying, hey, we got like more missions to run over Gaza today, but we don't have any more targets. So they drop it down to 60 and they add another 10,000 names to the list, right? This is what was going on in Gaza. So now this has been, it's not a kill list, but it is a very similar AI program called Elite, developed by Palantir, and it's being used by immigration enforcement in the United States. And basically what they do is they get a map of a neighborhood, and it assigns each person in that neighborhood a score of how likely they are to be an illegal immigrant. And if you score over a certain number, ICE then goes, knocks on your door, and rounds you up and arrests you if you don't have documentation. So there is Joseph Kotz at 404 Media who wrote this story last week, and he was interviewed on a news segment. I thought he had some really interesting insights, so I want to play this clip for you guys.
Hearing about this thing called Elite, I didn't know what it was at the time, and we didn't really know what tech ICE was using to actually find people. But eventually, I got leaked this user guide, which explained the tool in detail. I found this testimony from Oregon where an ICE official, you know, under sworn deposition, explained exactly how they were using this tool to actually target neighborhoods. And I also found this link to Palantir as well. I think finally providing the clearest link yet between the tech that Palantir is making and how ICE is actually choosing where to raid and where to target. An ICE official said it's basically like a Google's map interface where you can look around the United States, you can zoom in on targets. And I've seen the interface and he's exactly right. That's exactly what it looks like. You then click on an individual person and it brings up their name, a photo. Most importantly for ICE, their apparent address and also a confidence score on how likely it is that person is actually there, such as 90 out of 100 or 75 out of 100. It allows them to really zoom in on who they want to go pick up that day.
So you write about the app user guide. What did the user guide reveal to you?
It really showed in granular detail what exactly ICE is able to do, such as if they want to target this neighborhood, they'll maybe draw a circle around it and that will bring up information on all of the people there. If they want to figure out where a certain population might be, they can use it for that. And of course, I think really importantly for what is happening in Minnesota at the moment, the tool can be used to sort of write up special operations is what ICE calls it. And that can send target lists out to people on the ground and then they can then pursue them as well as part of these much wider operations that we're seeing across the United States.
So this is absolutely terrifying. And this is coming from a person who I wouldn't call myself an immigration hawk, but certainly after 4 years of Joe Biden, I really did see a need for America to secure its own border, understand who was coming into the United States, and probably pretty drastically reduce the number of people coming into this country in an overall sense. However, whenever you support a government policy, you always have to be very aware that there are really serious potential ramifications. And one of my big concerns in always in supporting any kind of immigration, restrictive immigration policy, is that there are millions of people living in the United States illegally. And if you really did have any serious intention of addressing that problem, you would need tens of thousands of police to constantly be going around and harassing people, right? Like asking for their identification. And part of what's great about the United States of America is that the freedom that we all have in this country, not to be walking down the street and have to, you know, have our papers on us or risk getting thrown in jail or, you know, just have a copy and able to stop you and ask you for your papers. But a mass deportation policy requires that. And of course, with Trump, it's been cartoonishly worse than it would even have to be. Rather than having any kind of trained police officers in any kind of recognizable police officer uniforms, right? Like these people are going around arresting, you know, women, mothers, and they have rifles on them, right? They're not just like cops with a sidearm that doesn't get pulled out. No, they have their rifles strapped around them at all times with all these civilian encounters. You could tell that most of these ICE people are all the people who 20 years ago, when they got out of high school or college, were too stupid to pass the police exam. And so now that the government is super desperate for law enforcement, they finally have some kind of role where they could have authority over other people's lives. And they've spent the past 20 years fantasizing what they would have done as a cop. And now that they're being put on the street, they're given this authority, they're given a big rifle, they're allowed to wear masks. They feel essentially lawless, right? Like nothing could restrict them. The president has their back. You could gun down a woman in the street in her car and absolutely get away with it. And so they're acting exactly as you expect they would. Absolute and 100% thuggetry all over the United States of America. We cannot allow this to happen. Even if you are pro deporting more illegal people out of the United States of America, you have to understand what Trump is going to do to execute that is going to destroy the United States of America. Probably, and I don't think a lot of people understand this, how much information our government has on each and every one of us. Now, you would think for the government to have the information that's on your cell phone, they would need a warrant, but they don't. They just need the American taxpayer's checkbook, because what they do is they write checks to Google and Facebook and all these other big tech companies, and they sell your data to the government, right? Data that they would actually need a warrant, that they would have to go to the judge and get a warrant with your name and a date and what is to be seized. They would have to do this, right? But instead, they're just buying it. It would be completely illegal if you lived in an apartment and the cops want to come in and search your apartment. They go to a judge and judge denies them the warrant. They can't then go to your landlord and pay your landlord $500 to let you into that apartment. That's a bribe. That's illegal. And that evidence would be inadmissible. But here you have them using all this data that they collect on us. Now they're plugging it into these AI algorithms. And again, they look a hell of a lot like the ones that Israel was using in Gaza. And they're using it to surveil, to monitor. And if, I guess, any of us are ever considered undesirables, as all these illegals in the United States are now, could be used to round us up and throw us in jail or expel us from the country. This is absolutely terrifying. We should all be highly concerned and highly active on these two particular issues. One, government using AI to identify potential people either for deportation or crimes or things like that. And two, government, particularly intelligence agencies, buying our information that they would otherwise need a warrant for with our tax dollars, right? They're using our own tax dollars to bribe and to buy our information from our tech overlords and to surveil and monitor us. This is absolutely unacceptable, unconstitutional, and un-American. All right, everybody, that will do it for the show today. Thank you all so much for listening. Please subscribe to the show. We are a growing channel, but they only grow with your support, right? If you guys aren't out there recommending, liking, sharing our stuff, then it's not going to grow and spread. So do me a favor, go out there, like and subscribe to the show, and we'll be back with another episode tomorrow.